Welcome back, everybody, to the TV Talk Machine podcast. I am your co-host, Jason Snell, and across the internet from me, as always, your host, chief TV critic at The Hollywood Reporter, Mr. Tim Goodman. Hi, Tim.
Hey, Jason.
We're back.
We are totally back.
It's, you know, how was your Thanksgiving?
It was good. It was very modern. It was good. I survived it.
How is it modern? Is the turkey like the shape of a cube?
Yes, it's a Bauhaus turkey.
Okay, uh-huh. Interesting. Very interesting. served on an entirely white platter on an entirely white table.
Right. Exactly. No.
That's good. That's good. You know, did you have turkey or did you have something modern?
No, we had turkey. Yes.
Okay. Good.
Yes.
All right.
No, it was turkey.
All right. That's good. Yeah.
How about you?
Good. I roasted a turkey. You know, we had some people. We had some family over and roasted
a turkey. Are you the turkey preparer?
I am the turkey preparer. All other dishes, other than the dessert, because I made a sweet potato pie, all other dishes were made by others. But I was the turkey preparer. So I make a brine the night before. And stick the whole turkey in a 5-gallon orange bucket from Home Depot. It sits in the garage all night, brining. And then I roast it the next day. Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. Works great.
I do not have any of those skills.
It's a TV turkey, Tim, because I learned how to make it from Good Eats on the Food Network, from Alton Brown on the Food Network.
Nice.
And I still make it like a decade later. I've been watching some of those again. I don't know if you ever watched that when it was on, but they're rerunning all of the old Good Eats on the Cooking Channel. And I just read that Alton Brown just signed a big new deal. I guess Discovery is buying all of the Food Network stuff from Scripps, all of the Scripps TV shows or TV channels. Mm-hmm. And he signed a new deal. There was a question, but like he does their Iron Chef stuff. And I think he's bringing back Good Eats. So that's fine. I loved that show. I watched Good Eats every week when it was on back like 10 years ago and learned
a
lot. Yeah.
I'm not a food. I mean, I like eating food and well documented and not preparing it. So.
Yeah, I'm not a big preparer of food, but one of the things I liked about Good Eats was, this is not a tangent I expected to go on right at the beginning of the show, but one of the great things about it is it felt like a really good how-to show. Like it was mm-hmm. not, and there's a science element to it, which I always really liked, which was like, here's why we do this, like science-wise, like how...
The science of turkey!
Yeah, well, I mean, like, there is. I'm not going to go into it, but the turkey brine works because of the osmotic pressure, and it's a whole crazy thing. But what I will say is, not only was that show entertaining, but it taught me so much about preparing food and about cooking different things. And a huge number of our recipes are still basically based on things from Good Eats and techniques that I use in the kitchen from Good Eats. So people should, if you've never seen it, check out Good Eats. It's on, I think it's on like 2 episodes a night on the Cooking Channel, if you get the Cooking Channel, which is not Food TV. It's like their spin-off channel, that because Food TV is all like reality shows about food sort of now, and so they also made a Cooking Channel, but yeah, it's good, and they are bringing it back. So if you want to,
whoever had let the boys talk about TV, turkey TV and food to start it, you win the lottery.
Well, you know, I think that wouldn't have been a bad bet given that it's Thanksgiving.
Yeah, that's true.
So, and now we're into December. I've got a letter about December coming up in a little bit. But first, we should probably talk about the stuff that you wrote in The Hollywood Reporter over the last 2 weeks, some of which we've touched on, but we should touch on again, some of which is new. You mentioned last time that you were working on this piece about the harassment in Hollywood and how do we deal with the people and how do we deal with the art. And that story posted, where it's you and 2 other critics talking about these issues, really thoughtful and interesting, and people should check it out. The link will be in the show notes in your podcast app or at theincomparable.com/TVTM. You can find it there too. But that, I thought that was a really good, thoughtful piece of, you know, of covering a lot of issues. It's not just about how do we engage with the art, but it's like, what does this moment mean? And so I really liked reading that. And of course, we've also had, you know, the wheel of names continues. As we go too, so
it is a never ending. Mm-hmm. It's just taking a lot of people down, and continues to, and apparently will continue to. I mean, Matt Lauer, mm-hmm. just being the latest one, John Lasseter. It's just, yep. they're Charlie Rose. They're going to be going on.
Charlie Rose, right? CW fired the guy who was one of the showrunners of their superhero shows. He got fired for his after their investigation. So I guess that didn't go well for him when they investigated his behavior. And yeah, it'll continue. But people should read that piece. It was a good piece. I could tell how kind of thoughtful and careful it was meant to be, because it's such a sensitive subject. And I think that the three of you all handled it very well.
Thank you. We tried to.
Yeah. Another piece that you wrote that I thought was really interesting, and it's so much branches off the themes of this podcast, which is No Chance, how the Hulu series starring Hugh Laurie, Chance, disappeared before your eyes. And we've talked about this show. You talked about how it's like, do people know that Hugh Laurie, huge star, another show he's doing, a new show for American TV, he plays a doctor. Everybody loved him as House. Two complete seasons on Spool on Hulu. Nobody's heard of it.
No. It's so weird.
And so you're like, this is the poster child. Like this is the TV show on the side of a carton of milk, essentially, of like, do you know what this show is? It's like, I have no idea. And it has all these things going for it. And yet, you know, you're pointing out here that it just, you know, there's too much distraction. There's too much else going on. So easy to miss. Even a show like this that by all rights should have done fine.
Yeah, it's the thing about it that struck me as odd was not just that, you know, it sort of ceased to exist, but that how far it fell off the radar. I mean, the fact that it had an 81 rating or whatever from Rotten Tomatoes in the first season, and then they couldn't find anybody who reviewed it in the second season, so they couldn't give it any rating. And that Metacritic, where it had generally favorable reviews, quote unquote, with a 64 in the first season, came back and said they found exactly one person in all of the world who reviewed it for season two. And they couldn't put a rating up either. It just didn't qualify. And, you know, if you Google it after 2016, like nothing happened. Like it's really hard to find anything that's relatable. The stars are not talking about it. Hulu's not mentioning it. And then I anecdotally, of course, stuff on Twitter, nobody was talking about that. And, you know, even after I wrote this piece, some people came out of the woodwork and said they were fans of it. But a lot of people said, yeah, I wanted to like it. I started it and I didn't like it, or I just forgot about it. And I think that's the fate. You know, we do talk about this all the time, about this plethora of shows, but this was the one, and I think it's because of Hugh Laurie being such a huge star. And, you know, and I tried to point out in the story that it's easy to get lost on Netflix. You can be a huge star and be lost on Netflix, but Hulu doesn't have as many, like, new original series, and they promote their stuff pretty well. It's pretty hard to get lost on Hulu in comparison to Netflix, but and so all of it conspired against them. And, you know, the show is interesting. It's certainly better than a lot of other shows that, you know, get reviewed into their third season. So I don't know. I think people just missed it. And a lot of critics missed it. And I think once that happens, they're not going to circle back for season two. And that's just the world we live in right now. But I thought I wanted to point it out, because I thought it would be a good, like, test case for how hard it is to make an impact. It's easier to make a show now, of course, in peak TV. And so many people are doing great work. But it's harder to get noticed. So that was what that column was about.
So I've got a wacky thought that I'm going to ask you, which is, given like how CBS launched Star Trek Discovery by showing it on the network, I wonder if is it possible that one of the solutions to dealing with a lack of discoverability of shows might be for outlets with limited visibility to somehow partner with outlets that have high visibility? And my thought about this is, like, this is Hugh Laurie. Like, why not have, I mean, it's too late now, but like after the first season of Chance, why not like make a deal with Fox to run the first season in the summertime on Fox, with promos saying season two is coming this fall on Hulu or something? Like, why not start doing, again, if Fox wanted to make that deal, but like, you know, new show, Hugh Laurie something fresh, you know, in terms of content. Nobody's ever heard of it, obviously, even though it ran on Hulu. I don't know. I mean, I get how everybody wants to play in their own playground, and stuff that's already run somewhere else, nobody really wants to run it again. And yet it does seem like the great advantage that something like a big cable channel or a broadcast network has is casting a wide net. And that's what these smaller providers can't do. So is there a possibility that we might see some other attempts to do that, of like, you know, I don't know how exactly it would be formed, but that was the first thing that hit me, was like, God, if you could get a promo for Chance on Fox, mm-hmm. yeah. saying Hugh Laurie is back as a doctor on a TV show, you would think some people would find that out, but nobody knows.
Yeah, there could have been targeted advertising from Hulu in that direction. Absolutely. There could have been a better campaign all around mm-hmm. for it. I think with content deals and, you know, although I think 21st Century Fox or Fox 21, the junior studio, was involved in the second season. So you could have had some kind of shared content there. It's really hard, though. These content deals are really hard. It doesn't benefit. I think that they look at it like Fox is like, it's not really our show. It doesn't really benefit it. It might take, people will think that we're, you know, there's a lot of ways to look at it. And Hulu wants it to be its own standalone. This is our product. We don't want to be confused that it's a Fox show. There's probably a lot of limitations, but thinking outside of the box for sure going forward, that has to be something that these people are that they're thinking about. And because how do you get noticed? I mean, that's why I wrote that story, like I said, but you know, you really only get like one chance that it's not, TV is not really a rediscover business. And it's, you get the one shot at it, and then almost no one comes back on the second season. Unless there's a sustained excellence that drives a lot of critics and writers, TV writers, to sort of keep talking about it, writing big feature stories about it, that said, I didn't watch it in the first season. Maybe I'll give it a chance. But those instances are very rare. So,
and I think the rediscovery that tends to happen is the other way, which is that first season, if marketed right or done right, you know, it turns up on Netflix, let's say, or mm-hmm. it turns up somewhere else. I saw that with The Good Place, I think, where mm-hmm. it's showing up on Netflix, I think, gained it a lot of attention that it didn't have when it was on NBC from a group of people who don't watch NBC. And that was good, right? But that's still kind of in the momentum of the first season. Not like, oh, season two of this random show is on, right? Because who's going to even review it unless it's super like A-list material? You're not, the number of shows you review season two of is very small compared to season one. Yeah, and then beyond season two, it's almost nothing unless mm-hmm. it's like the best show ever.
Yeah, it's got to be Game of Thrones, you know.
Yeah, it's Game of Thrones, it's the Americans at that mm-hmm. point, that's it.
Yep. It's really small, and it's getting smaller. So, but there has to be some strategy to help save these shows, because they're getting harder and harder to, I mean, and look, and even, I don't know, it's there's a lot of blunders in TV. I mean, the creators walking away from American Gods on Stars is huge.
I was gonna huge. Ask about that, because that seems like a gigantic just a disaster, right? Because that American Gods, such a stylized kind of storytelling, it might be at the top of my list of like, what's the show that could not continue? I mean, something like we'll talk about Marvelous Mrs. Maisel. Like, there are shows where the creator's voice or vision is so clear that you could keep going, but it's just not going to be like, why? Like, it's not mm-hmm. going to be the same. It'll be just kind of a parody or a copy of the original. Because that American Gods news, for those who didn't hear, that the two producers of American Gods walked away, apparently because of a dispute over their budget. Although, who mm-hmm. knows?
Yeah. That doesn't surprise me. You know, I was up in Vancouver and interviewing David Slade, who was an executive producer and the director of the first episodes, and he set the visual template for it. And there was some feeling that, you know, by the end of the season, they were they were doing a little more green screen and stuff a bit, you know, shying away from the budget. And, you know, I'm not sure. I think you have read it. I'm not sure. But it was a novel considered unfilmable. And if you take on, if you get into the business of taking on an unfilmable show, the only way you can film it is to put some money into it and use the technology that's out there. And you have to have a pretty big budget to do it. And it's just weird that they kind of, you know, they were pulling the reins back on that and they lost two. There's no recovery for that show, in my opinion. I don't think anybody's going to review it again. Dead money.
I mean, I look at that and think that's the kind of thing where why do you even go on? If you ask me, the most likely scenario for American Gods right now, it's probably the David Lynch thing where everybody announces they're walking away and then like 2 weeks later say, oh no, never mind. We worked it out. Because I'm not sure why you even continue with that show if Brian Fuller is not involved with it.
Yeah, it's kind of stunning. I don't see a recovery for that show at all.
Yeah, but your larger point is right. Like you know, we talk about every TV show is an investment. You're trying to make your money back. You want it to go long. You want it to have all the ancillary sales, right? And you're placing bets because they're not all going to be gems. They're not all going to make it. But the ones that make it outweigh the ones that don't. And that's how you stay in business. But like Chance, this is a good question, which is, you know, why invest in a show if you don't give it an opportunity? I was going to say a chance, an opportunity to catch people's eye. Why spend a lump of money and then fail to spend the lump of money that is also required so that anyone will see it?
Exactly. And the thing that struck me as I was researching and I had been on the back burner for a long time that I wanted to do Chance, and I had to catch up and get into the second season. But what struck me when I was like researching stuff was thinking like, what happened? Like I knew kind of what happened, but as far as like no press for it in season two, that really stunned me. Like I couldn't find anything. So I wonder if, because it was, you know, there was no pilot, they gave it a two season rollout. They gave it two seasons pre-approved ahead of time. And, you know, they came to TCA. Hugh Laurie was there. It was a very strong presentation. Ethan Suplee is great in it. Gretchen Mol was great in season one. They have some really good character actors throughout, even in season two. But there must have contractually been like either Hugh Laurie moved on but like, why not push Ethan Suplee for like feature stories? I don't know if either Hulu doesn't have the money to do that kind of outreach, or if newspapers and magazine outlets were like, never really heard of it. There's too many other really good things out right now. Because that would be a pretty good excuse. You could say, why would we do something that no one's really talking about? Especially if Hugh Laurie's not doing the press, right? And then when we could be doing like all this hyped up stuff that's happening on all these other channels. So that could have happened, but it's weird. It's like it ghosted. The thing is just gone. Like you can't, it's really hard to find things. So I don't know. What happened to it.
Speaking of things on Hulu, I'll throw in here a Twitter comment and question from Jason Barry, who has written to us a bunch saying, has anyone started watching Runaways on Hulu? I didn't realize it premiered.
Right. So it's crazy, right? No, I didn't. It's funny. I didn't like I saw the extended trailer of it. It didn't, and I didn't review it, but it didn't strike me as a show that I was keen to invest in right off the bat. So I think it got some okay reviews, but there's so much stuff coming out. I was like, nah, I'm going to skip that one.
Well, I have seen every episode so far, and which is four, I think, and I really like it. I loved the original material. I read the comic that it's based on. I think they're doing a pretty good job with it. They're definitely slowing down the story, because in the comic, they run away right away. And I saw somebody say on Twitter that they liked Runaways on Hulu, but they should probably have renamed it Walkaways because it's going to take a while for them. I think perhaps they will run away at the end of the season.
Oh, I see.
From their evil parents. But I think it's really good. But yeah, Jason Barry, I think you're on to something. I will say, once you get in the Hulu app, you kind of can't miss their originals. They are very good in the app at promoting their own stuff. The problem mm-hmm. is, if you aren't in that, if you don't have a reason to go into Hulu, it's harder to know that they're there. But once you're in there, boy, they will tell you all the Hulu originals, and it's hard not to miss them. But I do like that. I like that. That's a, I think, pretty well done, and not overly comic booky, which I think is good. I think, you know, it's not like Legion or something, but it is also not like the CW superhero shows. It's playing a little bit of a different game, and I like it so far. So that's my short Runaways review. Is for the nerd comic book nerds out there, I like it. It's pretty good.
Yeah, and well, lots to choose from, but that's why I didn't get to it.
There's so much to choose from. Mm. Well, I mean, it's, imagine an adaptation of some work that you have a fondness for. That was pretty much what put it to the top for me, is that I really like that book, mm. so I was in for it, and I think they've adapted it pretty well. You posted in the last 2 weeks since we've done this podcast, you posted your review of The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel, which we talked about a little bit before you had posted it a couple of weeks ago. I had seen the pilot before. I've seen the first mm-hmm. 4 episodes now. Mm-hmm. We've been watching some TV around the old house. It's nice.
Nice.
I don't mind the family bits as much as you. Mm-hmm. Probably because I kind of like being carried along with Tony Shalhoub and Kevin Pollak is shouting things at various points, and I think he's funny.
Yes, but the uncredited Kevin Pollak is like uncredited in like anything I've ever seen him for that series.
Yeah, that's weird. Here's the thing, though. I agree with you that the family stuff is strange, and I feel like it's almost there. It's there to ground the character, because the whole idea here is it's not supposed to just be about a woman whose husband leaves her and she becomes a famous stand-up comedian. It's also kind of about a woman whose life is completely torn apart, and she has to find a new path. And the new path is being a stand-up comedian. And I get that they're trying to ground it in that. So I'm okay with that, and I think that that's interesting, even though it's not nearly as good as when they're going to all the different comedy clubs and she's taking notes and she gets accused of being a spy for Don Rickles or whatever it is. That stuff is way more interesting, but I didn't dislike, I think, the family bits as much as you did. The thing that, though, that kind of baffles me is, if you're going to not steer around the family aspect of it, mm-hmm. I feel like you maybe need to not steer around the whole family aspect of it. And that this show totally steers around the kids. Like, she's got kids, mm-hmm. and the kids are present when necessary for plot purposes, mm-hmm. and otherwise they're just with grandma, right? I mean, they're just not around. And that's the part that kind of gets me, is even when she's at home, you barely see the kids unless there's a joke or a plot development involving them. And that's the part where I thought they're trying to have it both ways, where they want her to have kids and a family life, and they want to talk about her home life, but they're really only interested in her relationship with her parents.
Yeah, and
her ex, right? But the kids are just like, because she's got kids, that's part of the story, but then they want to have her doing all this stuff, and it's like, well, just forget about the kids. They do it in passing. So that's the part that kept nagging at me, is like, if you're going to go to her home life, you kind of should like fully commit to it, and I don't see full commitment. It's like just enough to get by. I love the other stuff so much that it's a big thumbs up despite that, because I think the humor of the parents and stuff is enough to carry me through, but it's the other stuff that really crackles. That's the stuff where she's Rachel Brosnahan, is that her name?
Yeah, Rachel Brosnahan. She's
just spectacular. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Magnificent. Marvelous, you might even say.
She's marvelous. Mm-hmm. And my thing is, I think I'm going to let that, this is the benefit of streaming services, I'm going to let I'm gonna let this. I think is Amazon rolling that out once a week?
That's Amazon. So it's a full drop. I mean, they did two seasons, right? So essentially, they have eight of them now, and then there'll be eight next year.
Yeah. So I think I'm gonna wait until people get all the way towards the end and suss out whether she's in the clubs more or in the upper.
Right. Because now I've just seen what you saw. Because I've seen the first four, which is what. Yeah. Critics got.
So I think that I'm going to wait and see if it moves towards the comedy. I'll come back to it. If not, it's really kind of not. I mean, I don't dislike it. I think she's amazing. It's just not a show that, like, there's so many other things I'm watching where I'm like, yes, I want to see more of this.
There is an amazing moment in, I think it's episode four, where they sneak into the kitchen at the Copa, and they're watching. Oh, who do they say it is? It's some famous comedian. It's Red Skelton. Mm-hmm. And he's on stage at the Copa, and he's doing his act, and they're like looking through the round window of the swinging doors from the kitchen, watching him perform. And then her friend gets taken away, or she's running around, and she's standing there, and then now she's opened the door, and she's looking out. And you see her, and there's this, it's like a really nice kind of slow push in shot on her, and her eyes are wide and she's watching him, and they cut back to the reverse shot, and it's her dressed up, not what she's wearing now, dressed up in a totally different outfit, holding court. She's now the center of attention on the stage with the spotlights at the Copa. Mm-hmm. And it is such a well done moment to communicate visually, right? To go back to like your visual studies classes, to communicate, this is the dream. This is why she's doing this. Like that moment. And that's such a great moment of that is why this person is driven to do this completely unreasonable thing with their life, is because she has that moment where she's like, this is what I want to do. That's who I want to be. It's great. It's really great.
And you gave credit there to Amy Sherman Palladino directing. So you directed the whole season.
Yeah, it's she and her husband definitely tag teamed this season. But it's as my wife points out every time we watch an episode, like the first five pages of credits are all just Palladinos.
Yeah, it's a true. Lot of Palladinos.
There's a lot of Palladinos in there. Also, we talked about Godless. Last time, but your review landed, so we should mention it again. It's on Netflix. I've heard from a lot of other people who have watched it and really liked it. The feminist Western Godless, everybody seems to like it.
Yes, and it's not really entirely a feminist Western.
Yeah,
they kind of sold it like that, and it's not. But it is very strong female characters.
Somebody pointed out like that the feminist Western, like 70%, 65% of the dialogue in episode one is spoken by men, so it's not quite an all female cast here, people.
Yeah, but there are it's I think it's a much more a balanced series. So there's that's why I think they kind of maybe aired in that way when they presented it as far as like. Promos, but it's a really strong Western. I watched the entirety of it. It can be slow moving at parts for some people. I understand that, but there's a payoff, and I really loved it. I will say this: I don't normally read a whole lot of other critics. I read a couple of the reviews from people who liked it but didn't like it, thought it had flaws, and I thought their reasons for saying it had flaws were ridiculous. So, it's like, but then again, I've kind of reached that point now as I've withdrawn from Twitter. It's just kind of like not wanting to be engaged in nitpicking so much on any level, whether it's just like about a show like that or about, other stuff that's going on in the world. And I was just like, I kind of get it now. Like, you can definitely nitpick a show to death, any show to death, if you put your heart and mind into it. And, but I think people should disregard if you heard something bad. Godless is really well told and interesting and great character development and some really excellent writing. And, 7 episodes is not too hard to invest. Loved it.
Awesome. I should mention a show. So Steven Soderbergh is involved in Godless.
Yes, so he's the executive producer.
I should mention something that is this is super weird. It's going to be on HBO, I believe, as a miniseries in the new year, but is already out as an app. Which is Mosaic. Yes.
Mosaic.
Which I have seen almost all of now, but it's weird. I have seen all but the last two, I want to say, blocks of content, because it's not quite a choose your own adventure, but it's non-linear ish in the way that it's told, where you basically watch a block that is kind of an episode of a miniseries, but not necessarily. And it runs in parallel sometimes with other episodes that have some of the scenes in common and some that are different. And you can follow one path all the way to the end, or you can do what we've actually been doing, which is kind of going back and forth so that we are keeping the chronology more or less intact. But you're seeing like a whole block of something from one character's perspective, and you see where it intersects the other character. And then you watch the other character and you see what they've been doing and where it intersects with the first character. And I have to say, it's pretty good. It's pretty good. Yeah. I've really enjoyed, as a kind of a murder mystery, with some interesting character stuff. And Soderbergh, I think that guy makes really good films and television. And I like it when he just kind of experiments. He doesn't seem like a very particularly like person who gets precious about his material. He's like having fun. And yeah. Mosaic is interesting. And Sharon Stone plays a fascinating character. She's like a famous children's book author who is in basically Park City, Utah. And there's a whole bunch of really interesting actors in it who you've seen in things before. Some of them, there's a moment where, who is it? Beau Bridges appears. And you're like, hey, Beau Bridges is in one scene and he goes away. And my wife turned to me at one point and she's like, Beau Bridges is going to come back because you don't have that random character be Beau Bridges. And she was totally right. I was like, yeah, probably you're right. And absolutely true. He comes back. But I don't know. I don't think THR has even reviewed it, because what is it? And it is going to, it got some funding from HBO that basically let them complete the shoot in exchange for Soderbergh presenting them a linear edit of it. So I think it's going to run as a mini series sometime in 2018 on HBO. But it's free. You can just download Mosaic on your device, on your Apple TV, on your iPad or whatever.
And you can download it on Apple TV.
Yeah, there's a Mosaic app on the Apple TV that will let you watch all of Mosaic.
Wow.
It's pretty cool. Yeah. And as you watch, I should say also, as you watch, things like pop up at various points where there's like ancillary material, like a video or an audio clip of something that's referenced in that scene that you can go get later, or you can just watch it right then. And then it just takes you right back into the flow of what you had been watching before. Really, again, it's a light touch. It's not super. I think I read an article with Soderbergh where he said they initially thought it would have way more decision points and be way more complicated, and they decided it was too complicated and they wanted to simplify it. And so it's just a light touch of interactivity, but it's fun. And I think it's pretty good as a kind of like weird, murder mystery kind of thing. So I really like the cross scene thing, where there are scenes, you're watching scenes and knowing, oh boy, we're going to see what, like, literally one character is talking to another character and you're following character A, and character B, there is something wrong with them. And you realize during Mosaic, oh, well, we'll find out what that is when we watch her version of this story that takes you, threads you through, you know, and then you follow her to that point and beyond. Yeah, pretty good. So I thought I'd mention it. It's not a TV show, but it will be, and it's an app, and it's Steven Soderbergh. So Mosaic.
All right. Well, you've got me interested. I kind of had filed that in the back of my mind. Like, I know it's coming. I'll just watch the.
Yeah.
You know, I always think like the quote unquote online toy, like it's always seems like it's a game or something or some.
Yeah, it's weird. I would say it's, I think that this is why I think they made the good call in making it not so interactive and having, there's only like 10 different blocks of story instead of like 40 or 50 where you can kind of watch. I'd say it's got like maybe like six or seven, maybe something like that, chapters where you've got, and they sort of run in parallel, sort of like two or three at a time where you can kind of see what's going on. But that way you basically can watch it like you're binging a TV show, except you're binging kind of like different segments. It's, you know, it's just, I would imagine that what they'll do on HBO is have the episodes be different perspective episodes so that you'll, you know, episode one will be from character A's perspective and episode two will be from character B's perspective. So you can still get that kind of fun feeling where you're revisiting the scene with a completely different context.
Yeah. Different POV. Okay. Yeah. I'm interested.
So, yeah, I mean, it's been kind of fun to watch that and a little bit of a change of pace, I guess I would say.
Yeah.
Okay. Critic's notebook you wrote that I thought was really fun, which is memo to the Golden Globes. So everybody out there knows the Golden Globes has a reputation for having some wacky nominees that are like, oh, why did they nominate that? That is strange.
And yes, that is a weird pick.
Right? Like always. Yes. It's like, are, you know, do the foreign press know something we don't? And so you took it upon yourself, and this is what's brilliant, to say, hey, Hollywood Foreign Press, here's some of those wacky things you could pick.
Yes.
Here they are. Please consider these wacky things to be your wacky things.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, some of it's going to cross over and be Emmy nominated too, but going back to the chance discussion, there's so much stuff to choose from, and a lot of it's going to get lost by the Emmy people. They're not going to figure it out. But yeah, and like, for example, like, it, for me, it was easy to say, okay, like Fargo, if Fargo gets, you know, they'll probably get a nomination for miniseries or whatever. But if there was ever going to be a nominating award, the Emmys would go for Ewan McGregor, no question, right? Because he's in a dual role, he's high profile. But I was like, why doesn't the Globes like go for David Thewlis or Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who were really good in Fargo in totally different roles? They were my two favorite characters by like a long shot. And it was just a chance to like tout more of the up and coming stuff like Get Shorty that I'm a big fan of. And who knows? Like, again, last example, if GLOW gets any recognition from the Emmys or whatever, it's going to be for Alison Brie, probably. And I think the Golden Globes can do their Golden Globesiest and do things like, you know, Betty Gilpin or Mark Maron or Brittany Young, who's really great in that. She's a breakout star. So I was just trying to give him some ideas.
Yeah, no, I like that. You mentioned American Vandal, too, which I thought was great. I watched all of American Vandal. There's another update.
Right.
It's great. It is a lot of fun. I know that there's a lot out there, but if you want to watch a mockumentary, it is incredibly well done. And actually, I would argue, I think the performances in it are amazing.
Yeah,
because
they really are.
It's really hard to, especially because actors are trained to be actors in parts. And here, they have to be real people inhabiting scenes that are being recorded by a documentary. It's a lot harder to do that and to read dialogue that sounds like you're literally just some random kid, stoned sitting on a couch talking about something. And they do a really good job, like the way it's shot, the way it's acted. I was very impressed. You're right. Jimmy Tatro is kind of amazing. Like, it's an amazing performance. And yeah, it is about people who are accused of painting dicks on cars in the teacher's parking lot. It always comes
who
back.
Who drew the dicks? That's
who
what
drew
comes
the
down
dicks?
To.
That's the,
who drew the dicks?
So you know, there trending was a story a couple weeks ago about how some Air Force guy or naval, maybe it was Navy aviator, got in trouble because they drew a penis in the sky using their contrails, and that led to a long cascade of people saying American Vandal season two. Because yeah, it's good. It is. It's really good. And they did pick it up. There is going to be an American Vandal season two, which is they did a little trailer for it and everything. So
yeah, we'll see. And I actually great. in that little piece about the Golden Globes, I thought I would be a little bit provocative and suggest that Jimmy Tatro, his turn as the dumb, taking over the dumb teen trope, was the, I said, quote, arguably the modern version of Sean Penn's Jeff Spicoli.
Yeah. And then, as you pointed out, the Globesiest pick would be The Tick.
Oh,
where
yeah.
Everybody's like, what? And they're like, I have to do an accent. They're the foreign press. We know what we are doing. The Tick. We pick The Tick. That is what we pick, Americans. I don't know what that country that voice is from.
I don't know, but I don't know. Probably, it's
sort of French Russian.
He's probably representative of the five or seven people.
It's very
vote.
Simple. It's The Tick. The Tick is best show on American television. Anyway, yeah, as you put it, you're welcome. There it is.
There it is. It's
Thank
all yours.
You, Golden Globes. You've done. Tim has helped you out finding your weird picks for you.
Yeah, why not? And there's a lot. Oh my God! And by the way, we're as we record this and send this out into the world, I'm still honing down all my picks for the.
I was going to ask. It is December 1st as we record this, which means it is officially time for me to ask that question I did not want to ask before because I didn't want to crush your soul. Which is, how goes the list making?
It's going pretty well, I think.
Did the power rankings help? Because you've been listing things ongoing.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I've had many opportunities in the last couple of weeks to add more. Well, I had recently had some, but I could have had some this week and last week and next week. It's just too close to the end of the year, so I'm just going to give them a break. And maybe if I did something, it would be like about a cast or something, and then or whatever, one of the side ones. But yeah, I'm going to slide into the end of the year prepping this. Dan and I have to have our stuff done pretty soon, at least for the magazine, our picks, and then we're going to do shorter versions and then expanded versions. And I think I normally do one or two for outside publications and just doing one this year. Cause it's hard enough. You make these picks on December 1, for some people. And then you're like, okay, four more shows came.
Yeah.
So, I already, my picks are going to be very eclectic. I can tell. I mean, I think in
Shocker.
General. Yeah. Right.
Shocker. That's good. I have you should do a, have you not done a power rankings of like streaming services?
No, that could be a possibility,
right? That might be a good one. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But yeah, you should save your gunpowder on shows for the best. It's really the power rankings. It's really your power rankings. End of
it
year
really
power
is.
Rankings.
Yeah.
Is what
that's
it is.
Like what it is. Yeah. So, I'm excited about it. I kind of know where I am. It's funny. Dan's like, do you know you're number one? I'm like, is this a trick question? Like if I tell you, am I obligated to not change my mind on it? So no. But I know what I
All
got.
Right. Okay. Well, I look forward to that. We will. That's some good podcast fodder for December is what I'm saying. So I'm looking forward to those getting out into the world and we can talk about them.
Yeah. And I would just say this, and this is not, I'm not trying to Columbo you. I know it's not up yet. Oh, wait, it is up. I did Columbo you, but I was right. Another Critics Notebook just got posted 4 minutes ago.
Breaking. New Critics Notebook.
What TV to catch up on
before
the holidays.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Breaking news of stories you've written.
That's tremendous. I was wondering when it was going to go up. I hadn't heard back from anybody.
What TV? Yeah. So, Tim, another piece you wrote in the last couple of weeks is this Critics Notebook about what TV to catch up on before the holidays. Tell me about that story that I totally read and didn't just hear about.
Well, here's what I love about it is that it's basically saying to telling everybody, look, hey, last year's I had 38 shows in 2016. I'll probably have more this year. I had 13 for the network. So, you know, count yourself or prepare yourself. There's probably going to be more for 2017. And then I reminded people like, hey, you know what I do? I do this thing called the Power Rankings. And here's a couple that you should be watching. But basically it's saying if there's ever a slow period, it's right now. It's the month of December from December 1 through the 30th or whatever. That's it. Yeah, there's not a lot of strong content outside of maybe a couple of shows, and I just presume that some people hadn't watched them. So I was basically saying you've got about a month to cram all this stuff in and be able to go to a holiday party or an office party or something your family put together or Christmas dinner and be able to contribute to the conversation about this popular medium. And if you can't watch everything that I have on these two power rankings, then let me give you sort of a truncated version of things that you should watch. Yeah. But basically it's a reminder to people like, hey man, if you're going to binge something, now's your time. There's not a whole lot of new shows. And once January comes around, you're going to die again. So
I think this is news you can use, right? It's basically here's some shows you might want to watch and then be part of the conversation about. You mentioned Mr. Robot in here. I'm still current on Mr. Robot this season. Two more episodes to go. That's a great really show, good, man. Right? That's a great yeah. show. It and the confidence and the varied tone and the different things that he does. Like there was the Knight Rider theme song that plays big mm. in an episode that you yep. think is going to be a fun ride. It is not a fun ride. That episode is super bleak and sad. And then the most recent episode was really amazing in a totally different way. They did that concept episode where they have the one take. They just, boy, that show. It is, I don't know where they're going again. They are still convincing me that there is just going to be time travel at some point. And I'm going to be like, well, all right, okay, there's time travel yeah. now. Uh-huh. You know, they go watch Back to the Future Part 2, so it's right there. Like, mm-hmm. I get it. Anyway, yeah, that show is really, the season 3 is killing it for Mr. Robot.
I think so, too.
Yeah. It's one of those rare shows where we talk about it when it's in a third season instead of just ignoring it.
Instead of poor chance.
Oh. All right, let's do some letters. How about that?
Okay.
Now that you've Columbo'd me, we will move on. Our friend the MVP, My Vogon Poetry, wrote
yes
to say, after 5 attempts, I finally finished Search Party. Is this a peak TV symptom, having to try so many times? What's your record for attempts trying a show before it won you over?
2.
Yeah.
Seriously, I wouldn't do 5. There's mm-hmm. no way. I'd do 2, and that's about all you get now.
It says something if you can't do it, right? It's like yep. life's too short. There's too much good stuff out there. It's math. It's basic math. Like, if you have to force yourself a couple of times to try and watch something, there is certainly something else out there for you that you, yeah, don't, you won't have
forced. It's not really
in.
The show for you.
Don't choke it down. It's not right. worth it.
It's not the show for you. And I think via Twitter and following other TV critics gives you a chance to say... And whether you believe this is true or not, it gives you a chance to say, well, you know, the old, it gets better on the 7th episode. Okay, well, should I just start on the 7th episode? I mean, it's just, there's...
No, you got to watch like, the 6 episodes that aren't very good
all right,
in order to appreciate how good...
I know pretty well that it's either going to be for me or it's not going to be for me. And if it's not, it's not. I'll find something else.
This is an actual helpful exchange on Twitter that happened that I think that is our favorite kind because we didn't have to do any work. Cassie wrote in to say, do you guys know when and where Peaky Blinders season 4 will be available in the US? At which point another Twitter user, Peter Dickinson, wrote in to say the BBC finishes airing it on December 20th. The exact date is not known yet, but Netflix US will show it after that.
Yes, and I believe the date is December 22nd.
December 22nd. There you go. Mm-hmm. See?
Look at that.
Look at that. You won up to Peter stuff. Dickinson with your knowledge. It's too bad you're not on Twitter anymore, but that's okay.
I know.
But that's why I have a podcast, is to drop the knowledge like that.
There we go.
All right.
I'll put that out there.
Lon, who is one of our incomparable members, asked in the members only Slack. That's just a plug. If you want to
like
give
those.
Us, if you want to kick some money to the TV Talk Machine, you can sign up to be an incomparable member and check the box for TVTM. And then you also can hang out with members like Indy Sarah and member Lon in Slack. He asked, Tim, does every show get your full attention when you're reviewing it? Can your attention wander, or is there an eyes taped open Clockwork Orange type situation, even for isolate torso television moments?
Well, there is a reference to using toothpicks to keep myself awake in the current one that I just posted 4 or 5 minutes ago. So there's that. And I just want to do a quick, before I finish answering this, a quick correction. Peaky Blinders, Thursday, December 21.
Oh, so literally the BBC finishes it on the 20th and bang, it's on Netflix the next day.
Yeah, which makes a lot of sense. So that's good.
That's good.
It's interesting, that question. I think that question, normally I would say network stuff, I lose my attention span pretty quickly. I try not to. But I'm reviewing a lot less of that now, on purpose. I just think my time is not
by design,
yeah. not used wisely there. But no, everything else I kind of, and if I'm losing interest in a series as I watch it, that's a sign, right? That's going to be in the review. But I don't like fold laundry or, I'm not like reading emails while I'm watching anything. No, I don't. That's not how I do it. I devote full attention to all the things I'm watching.
You're working. It's your job. Mm-hmm.
That's my job.
Although I suppose if your attention wanders, that tells you something about the show.
Mm-hmm.
No
it's
doubt.
It's a bad sign. All right. This is a good one. This is from Socrates in the +61 in Australia.
Yeah.
Who said, we were talking about The Good Doctor a while ago. He said, fun fact, I work in TV in Australia. The Good Doctor is the only successful network show this year on free-to-air television. Last year, the only one was This Is Us. Has there ever been an Aussie TV show reviewed in recent years? I keep begging Americans to watch Wentworth, but it seems unlikely. Very few. That's the thing. We get all the UK shows. I feel like Australian TV rarely makes it to the US.
Yes, there's some Australian stuff on
Acorn. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you can see it on there. There is a pretty big. I haven't seen it yet. There's a pretty big Australian series on Acorn. But I don't. It's funny. You could say there's a pretty big American show on some European thing, and then Americans would say, "Yeah, but it's no good." Like it almost like you want to wait for an Aussie to say what, like this one, like what's good? What do you guys really, you know, say that we should be watching? So there's that. There's definitely that. But yeah, just none off the top of my head.
Wentworth is on Netflix, apparently.
Wentworth. Okay.
Wentworth.
I don't even know what Wentworth is, but okay.
Netflix and also maybe Amazon and iTunes. I don't know. It's Wentworth. It's just, I'm just saying. He thinks we should watch it.
Okay. Wentworth. Don't steer me wrong, man. I got not a lot of time.
It sounds like that they did like 5 seasons of Wentworth. That was a big hit.
Oh, boy. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not new. Okay, this is from a fellow Incomparable host, actually, of several podcasts on the Incomparable Network. Steven in Edmonton wrote in, friend of the show, I guess I should say.
Friend of the show.
Saying, and we like Canadians on this show, of course. We've established that. This is where we have friendly relations with Canada. We're afraid of the spiders in Australia, but we're friends of Canada.
And drop bears.
Don't even mention the drop bears. That's why I said spiders. Don't mention drop bears. Oh my God, now I'm not going to sleep for a week. Steven says, regarding network television, I always thought comedy worked better in the network TV format. When there are no restrictions on runtime, I find that with some cable shows, jokes that don't work just get left in simply because they have the time. What do you think?
Yeah, disagree, because I think that a lot of fellow critics, and I don't understand it, have that as an excuse. They hate that. And some of them will complain beforehand. Oh, it runs 47 minutes or 43 minutes or an hour and seven. But my feeling is like, if it's an hour and seven and it's good, then I don't care how long it runs. You know, to me, it's the runtime is not the critical component to me. It's the whether it's good or not. As far as like, editing it out because they had an extra few minutes, I'm not sure that always lines up. Plus, comedy being subjective, maybe they kept those jokes in because they were funny, or they thought they were funny, but they weren't funny to you know, this person or someone else, and I laughed. Who knows? You know, I think comedy is subjective. I can't watch Saturday Night Live because I think 90% of it's not funny. And they need a terribly, terribly need an editor. But other people love it. So I don't know. I don't think runtime is the problem, is what I'll say.
I guess the argument could be that if you've got to fit it to length, then you may lop off the 10% of the least funny material just to get it to fit in. So it will feel like more of a kind of full package. But I can see both sides. The Office and Parks and Rec both did extended episodes where they would take their producer's cut. And I always thought this was a really great way of doing it, which is they would do the show that they wanted to make. And that's the one that's on Netflix now, actually. Those are not the ones. The network cuts are never to be seen again except on like a syndication. So they would do their producer's cut at 41 minutes or whatever, 34 minutes. And then they do a network cut at 23 or whatever it needed to be. And I would like go on iTunes and buy those. And they were great. But for whatever reason, you know, they ran long, and so they had to cut to get it to fit their time slot. I love the idea that with those shows that they had the foresight to create like the real episode and then the cut down version that actually ran on the network. And the nice thing about that is that now the canonical version is the long one. So
yeah, interesting. Yeah, that's a great counterpoint.
But I will say to Steven, I do agree. Sometimes creators thrive by being given constraints. Mm-hmm. And
yes,
sometimes
and
they
others
don't.
Are being indulged. Yes, yeah. Right.
Some mm-hmm. some people you give them all the time in the world and they will take it and do something bad. And others will have an internal self-restraint that will make them cut the jokes that aren't funny. But
exactly.
Maybe they get exposed more if they're given that opportunity. I don't know. Sue on Twitter sent us a tweet, just FYI, from Conan O'Brien that said, "I believe that when we die, we all become podcasts."
Sue, yes, I saw that.
Thank
that
you, Sue. Great. FYI, just FYI. Chris wrote in to say, "You refuse to answer the big question, which is when the riches will return." Quite honestly, now that Twin Peaks returned, anything is possible, though.
Yeah, it's still coming.
So can you imagine what will happen if the riches come back? Like, we will never hear the end of it. That will be the end of us. That's when Joe and Benny come back. It's when the riches come back. They come back mm-hmm. together. So how about this one instead? What are you seeing out there as tools to help us navigate all that is available on broadcast cable and streaming? I wish Netflix or Hulu had the recommended by Bastard Machine listing. So Tim TV again is back. Uh-huh. We could do that. And you Fan TV is the one that I've been using that you recommended, which is pretty good.
Yeah, I think Fan TV is pretty good. I think I have noticed a few glitches as far as like they don't have everything.
Yeah, they miss some stuff. It's a tough job, I think, to try and keep up on all of the all.
It
of
really
those.
Is. It really is, because I think sometimes when this is just my guess, I think sometimes when they post something in, whenever they do it, like okay, you'd say just for example, you would say The Wire. Where can I see The Wire? And sometimes it's on three different places. It's on HBO Go. It's on Amazon or whatever. The ones that they put in early, once those deals are up, they're not fixed, I don't think.
Oh, interesting.
Somebody's not there to go back and say, oh, right, let's revamp these, because I've gone to sometimes and it said, oh, it's here, and it wasn't. For example, I think the last one that I came up with was, I believe that Fan TV was, I could be wrong, was saying that Friday Night Lights was on Netflix, and I don't think it is anymore. Hmm. So that was the one that stood out, but for the most part, I really like that app.
Yeah, and the world definitely needs that. You're right. Actually, it says Netflix on one level, but when you click through to watch an episode, it's not Netflix. Isn't there for Friday Night Lights?
Yeah.
So yeah, the world needs that. This is a key thing. Is you need to be able to make wish lists and find out where they are. And the thing is, the services don't want to let you amalgamate them, because they want, like I said earlier about Hulu, like you go to Hulu's app and you can tell what all the Hulu originals are. This is why the services don't want there to be an amalgamator, because then they lose their ability to control you and market to you if you're mm-hmm. using TiVo or Apple TV or whatever to do it. They don't want that. So they're going to fight it, which is too bad, because it's consumer friendly to let us have our wish lists, have our watch lists, merge all of the different services we own together into one big amorphous mass of TV. They don't want it. So we'll see what happens there. Good letter from Cameron saying, I just want to follow up on the network TV debate by agreeing completely with Tim's point. Oh, that's a good letter, isn't it? That the length more than quality is generally the issue with network TV. I gave up on Empire after season one, ditched the CW superheroes after last year's crossover, and have sampled countless pilots, including The Good Doctor, This Is Us, as many others, only to be put off by the 22-hour commitment. That's mm-hmm. 80-plus hours if you watch all the CW superheroes. I might be a Brit, but that explains a lot. But all my first binge watches were American network shows like Smallville and Supernatural, but I'm down to a handful of network shows now, including Riverdale and the ABC comedies. Yeah, I just wanted to shout out two of my top five series of all time, The West Wing and Friday Night Lights, which were both network TV series. So if TV produces another Emmy caliber show, I'll be watching. Cameron. I think that's, I mean, I hear this from a lot of people now, where it used to be like, it's great, my favorite show has 22 episodes, and now there's so much good TV that's like, do I really need to watch all 22?
Yeah.
Yeah. We become Brits, Tim. We become like the Brits now. We just can't take these crazy 22 episode commitments.
Yeah, I have. That's on my list of column to dos. I've had that on there for a while. It's like the death of the 22 episode season. So
it's
got to change.
It's too much.
One of the many things that needs to be fixed on the broadcast side.
This is from Alan in the +1415. This is my nemesis, Alan. He points out doubly my nemesis, because he has 2 degrees from Stanford. I am a Cal fan, and I have 2 degrees from the University of California. So,
this is going to get ugly.
Yeah, mm-hmm. No, this is good. He has 2 questions, or one of them is, what do you and Tim think of The Punisher? I got through 2.5 episodes and couldn't get into it. Have you seen any of that? You haven't
seen
that.
None of it. No,
I watched episode one. I thought it was pretty good. I actually think I like the nuance of The Punisher, which I can't believe I just said that, because it's about PTSD. It's about a guy who is suffering from severe post-traumatic stress. There are a bunch of characters who have different issues with, like, they come back from war. I think it has depths that impress me. Huh. That said, I feel like also everybody making it knows that part of the remit is like lots of gunfire and violence. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't really work for me. So I don't know how many more episodes I'm going to get through, but I have to say, after one episode, it seems way better than Iron Fist, and Jon Bernthal continuing to do what he did in Daredevil season 2, which is add layers to the Punisher that I didn't know were there, didn't think were there, and that they treat that character with a level of respect and understanding that they totally don't have to do. They could make him like the comics, where he's much more of a caricature, and they haven't. That he is a messed up dude who's seen some horrible things and had horrible things happen to him in his life, and he's trying to figure out how to, like, deal with it. And that part of it, I think, is actually really admirable. But then also then people's heads, like, explode and stuff. And I'm like, all right, that's not so much for me. So,
well, I'm going to watch it. It is on my list. It's not like it's Iron Fist.
Yeah, Alan's other thing, he says, concerning Crazy Ex-Girlfriend, in the past podcast episode, you mentioned you had some comments about, I think this is to me, about whether the serious topic of the current season was helping or hindering the show. I was curious what they were. I feel like I should like the season and thus reward it for venturing into daring waters, but I'm just not enjoying it. I did toss this off and realize I never resolved it, but what I will say is this, which is, I appreciate the humor of Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. I like the fact that they do original songs. I think Rebecca Bloom is... Rachel Bloom? It plays Rebecca. Rachel Bloom. Mm-hmm. I think she's incredibly talented. I don't like Rebecca. I think she's kind of awful, and it's sad to see the behavior of that character, and the characters around her seem to be much more her enablers now, rather than kind of like trying to drag her back to reality as it was in the beginning. Mm-hmm. And as a result, I kind of don't enjoy watching the show anymore, because I feel like it's pushed her too far to the ridiculous and also the sort of sad. And so when I kind of like, when I felt she was grounded in reality but kind of messed up, I don't know, I kind of went with it. And something turned sort of mid to late second season where I was no longer on her side and actually thought she was awful. And that's not a show that is enjoyable to watch for me. So that's my story.
Oh, that's tough.
Yeah. I don't know.
Now I'm behind, so I can't even comment.
It's a tough line to walk, right? About, you know, you want people to like the show. They don't have to like the character, but they need to like the show. And how do you make a character have problems but still have the show be one that you're looking forward to? And for me, Crazy Ex-Girlfriend's kind of tipped over the edge this year. I'm still watching it, not immediately, right? It's like, I guess I could watch one of those, and
that's the issue, right? That's the thing.
It's not good. If my wife didn't want to watch it, I wouldn't watch it anymore. I'll put it that way. Dean from the 707, long distance traveler, just wrote in to say, I was happy to find Andy Barker PI on Hulu, all of it.
Ooh, nice.
You can check that out. That was always good.
Mm-hmm.
That was a Conan O'Brien produced show starring Andy Richter, and it is absurd and funny.
Mm-hmm.
Indoors Dave writes in from the 417.
Wow, I love that. Yes.
Indoors Dave from the 417, which is Missouri, southwestern Missouri. He might be in Branson, Missouri. We don't know. Indoors Dave. And he says, I've given up on trying to get my teenage daughter to watch anything other than reality TV. Can you give me some recommendations for something, anything other than stuff on E?
Huh. Well, okay. That's a serious one. If you've given up, I always say don't give up, right? I always say, like, keep fighting the good fight. And,
how do we arm Indoors Dave with what shows can he recommend to his teenage daughter that aren't reality shows?
Here's what I'm going to do for Indoor Dave. I'm going to direct, Indoor Dave to a power rankings
Ooh.
That I have with all the, the list of must-watch non-fiction. So I didn't say reality because, you know, I think if you're if your kids are only going to watch reality shows, that's a struggle, clearly. But I do have an old Power Rankings from late September, that has, and it didn't have the Vietnam War on there. I mean, if you can get your daughter to watch the Vietnam War, I mean, maybe watch it with her. That would be great. But I have a list. We can put it in the show notes from nonfiction TV. But like, there's so much great stuff on there. Planet Earth 2, Soundbreaking.
Great British Baking Show is on there. Star Talk is on there.
Anthony Bourdain, sorry, Parts Unknown. Anthony Bourdain, Parts Unnamed.
Yeah.
Grand Tour, Defiant Ones. There's a lot of really good stuff on there. Star Talk with Neil deGrasse Tyson. There's a lot. Carpool Karaoke. A lot of fun stuff in there. And a Great British Bake Off and the / Baking Show, whether you're watching the British version or the American version. And there's a bunch in there. There's options.
And I will toss in for Indoors Dave the shows that my teenage daughter, my 16-year-old daughter, has enjoyed. She loves Riverdale on the CW, mm-hmm. and the first season's on Netflix. Huge, I mean, loves it. And her favorite shows of all time are The Office and Parks and Recreation. And she's now also dug through Arrested Development, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, and she's watching Community right now. So she's a big comedy connoisseur, mm-hmm. which I like because strong. I like all of those shows. But mm-hmm. on the soapy side, that's a case too where if she likes Riverdale, it's an of the moment kind of show. Netflix actually just picked up today, as we're recording this, mm-hmm. 20 episodes of the Sabrina spinoff from the producers of Riverdale. They're going to redo the Sabrina the Teenage Witch, basically in the Riverdale style. And Netflix bought that. It is something where if she gets into it, her friends are going to be into it too. She's going to know people who are into it, and that's always a good thing when it's not just something from the catalog. It's actually part of the zeitgeist. And as I can tell you from my window into it with my 16-year-old daughter, Riverdale is totally part of like the teen TV zeitgeist right now.
Yep, totally on that.
So that
and my kids love Bob's Burgers. So oh man, that's a good choice.
Jamie mm-hmm. loves Bob's Burgers too. That's a mm-hmm. that's a great one. Mm-hmm. Animation. Sometimes animation's a way in if they're like, I don't want to watch, you know, filmed stuff, just reality. It's like, well, how about this? How about this animated series? How about Bob's Burgers? It's great.
Mm-hmm. Strong.
All right. Last one. This is from, I have two more.
Okay.
We'll do them really quick. First, Peter from the 503 says, hey, Tim, what about a Power Rankings Hall of Fame annual book? You could become the Leonard Maltin of television, full of lists of Tim's favorite shows of all time, broken down by various categories, similar to the current Power Rankings. It's a $1 million idea, Tim. Power Rankings the book. What do you think?
Wow. I think I would rather chop my own dick off than write a book about TV.
I got to check the box now.
I write about TV every day. Like, Yeah, maybe it would. Like, I would love some more money, right? The THR is not going to give me any more money, apparently. So they're not.
Wow. Are you negotiating in public now?
Oh, wow. That was dark. but like, yeah, I would love to have something where I just did this, you know, recurring book. And it was about all that stuff, Power Rankings. And maybe that could be something that actually does happen. But the idea of actually writing a book about television is so... I just couldn't do it. Like I know that a lot of friends of mine and other critics seem these days to be very, very invested in writing multiple books, and nothing could be less interesting for me. I definitely want to write a book about music.
That's in
the works. Yeah, that's in the works. I'm going to be doing that. And I definitely need to make a better effort of that in 2018 than 17. So, it's a great idea. If I make money though, if somebody said to me, we'll just want to print everything you've written, and you don't have to update them, I'm like, okay, let's do that. But,
I don't know how strong the book industry is now either. So it's, yeah, that's the other thing about that. So there, yeah, was a day
and I have no time.
Power Rankings, the book, could have been something, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, but these days.
Perfect segue, though, talking about music, to our last letter, which is from, as mentioned in a previous show, Marlene, who has a very complicated Twitter handle that we're not going to get into. But she's from the 510, and as she reminds us now every time, not a robot. Her Twitter handle makes her seem like she could have been a robot, not a robot. Her name is Marlene. And she says, "Were you serious, Jason, when you said that Tim should update his holiday music recommendations, maybe as a bonus? The last one I can find is from back in 2008. The classics are still gold, but maybe there's more to choose from. The holidays are upon us, and it's never too late. I'd love to see it." And this is a setup, because I was thinking, you know, maybe we should do, whether it's as a bonus or just as a little aside, have a little conversation about your holiday music playlist and stuff like that, because that's, I know that you care about that, and you've constructed some pretty amazing holiday playlists. I was listening to one the other day.
Nice. Yeah. Yes, I am actually, it's super timely, because I was, in all honesty, I was hoping that I would have it done today. Not to talk about on the podcast, because I didn't know that question was coming, but because of December 1, I started like the day after Thanksgiving listening to stuff. Mm-hmm. But I'm definitely going to update it. I have been bookmarking lots of stories and stuff about new Christmas songs that'll come out from varied artists that I want to listen to and add to the list. I'm going to update the one that I have. I did a little spinoff last year. Last year I did a little teeny spinoff of it, a little bit more non-traditional and more car friendly stuff. But I have been listening to that a lot lately, and I've discovered its weaknesses, which I am going to prune.
Oh, good.
And tweak. So I stay tuned, as I guess the answer to that. I'm seriously, I'm going to be on it. I'm going to get that done in the next few days.
All right. And I think I feel like we should talk about that here a little bit, because I think that would be fascinating.
Yeah,
and let's do that, and sometimes sometimes we're in early December, we end up spinning our wheels because your lists have not yet been revealed.
Right, so, and as I said in this current one that went up today, there's not a whole lot of stuff coming in December.
Right, that's right. So anyway, Marlene, we'll find a way to make that happen, and if nothing else, we'll mention it and link to the list. And last year, what I did is, because I'm an Apple Music listener or user, and you're a Spotify, is that I bought an app that lets me actually like import a Spotify playlist into Apple Music. So that's one thing we can do, is we can make like a Spotify playlist, and I'll make my fake, you know, Apple Music version of your playlist, and then we can put those in the show notes, and people can listen to the music. And
That's fantastic.
It'll be good. So we'll make it available.
Well, you'll have to send me off air, as we say. You'll have to send me what that app is, because I'm on Apple Music as well.
So I thought you were on Spotify.
I'm on both now.
Oh, so you're on both.
But I haven't made any. I don't think I've made any public lists on Apple, but I will.
Yeah. Oh, so that's good, because then my fake lists can come off.
Fake list.
Well, I mean,
all lists are good.
It says all the playlists I create say by Jason Snell. So then in the description, it says, this is actually from Tim Goodman.
That's funny.
And I just moved it. It's called Song Shift is the name of the app. Song Shift. And it's free. And then there's like an in-app purchase. And then you can basically move all of your playlists from one service to another. You can copy them all over, which is pretty cool.
Cool. I'll do that.
That's what I use. All right. I think we're done. Everybody out there, here are the numbers, as we like to say, podcast@tvtalkmachine.com is how you can email us. You can also post on our Facebook group, facebook.com/tvtalkmachine. And of course, you can tweet at us. Those are great. And they're longer than they used to be, which is nice, @tvtm. And then I'm Jay Snell on Twitter, and Tim is Bastard Machine on Twitter. But really, if you want a question for the podcast, just tweet it to TVTM. We look at that too. And that's it. Tim, I will talk to you next week. Have a good weekend.
All right. You too.
Bye, everybody.